Warning, the following podcast may contain language that some listeners may find offensive or confusing or intriguing. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the 3v3 podcast, your socially distanced hockey chat show. Here are your hosts, Cassie, Pat, and Patrick.
So, daylight savings time. Either you love it, you hate it, or indifferent to it. Whatever you do, just try not to lie to yourself like the Pittsburgh Penguins are to themselves right now. Dear God. So, what do you guys want to hear about first?
Where's Mike Sullivan coaching next season?
That I don't know.
Because I don't think it's going to be Pittsburgh. He'll immediately find a new job. So, you know, the Penguins organization's off the hook. But, yeah, they're ready for a different coaching type who I'm sure we'll talk about later. Who gets the team 90% of the way there first instead of just worrying about the 10% that gets them over the top.
I say again, has Sidney Crosby lost the room?
Has the team lost Sidney Crosby?
No. No, his programming is still intact. Daylight savings did not mess. Or you know what didn't mess with him? The leap year. It didn't mess with his internal calendar. He's doing exactly what he was programmed to do.
He didn't have a February 30th by accident.
Oh god.
No.
So as go ahead, sorry.
No.
So as I said to you guys in the chat yesterday after the second period, the Pittsburgh Penguins defense up close and personal was making my eye twitch. Oh, my God.
Go on. Tell us more.
I have a list.
Yes, she did homework, Pat.
She did the show prep this week. Fantastic, Cassie.
I wasn't going to, and then I started thinking. I was watching the Penguins and Oilers game this afternoon, and I was like, oh, right, I need to remember to say that, and I remember and remember that, and I just had to start writing it all.
And then the floodgates opened, right?
Oh, God. No, actually, I had a bunch of things rolling around in my head, but then I was watching them play. Which, by the way, if you watch this game today, which is Sunday, March 10th, against Edmonton, they played better today than they did yesterday.
Yeah, what did they lose by today? Only four?
Yeah, they've erased their positive goal differential in three games. They've been outscored in the last three games, 15-1.
They're down to a -4 on the season after today.
Oh God!
So things really do find their equilibrium.
All right. So first I need to mention, I've been avoiding this because when I lived in DC, I used to take the train into Verizon Center, and the DC Metro was fantastic. It gets a lot of crap for things, but it's fantastic. People, there's train etiquette going on there. Boston, bunch of animals. They have no idea what they're doing. So I took the train in. That was my first mistake. But
you were shawned.
Oh God!
But was that S-E-A-N-D, S-H-A-W-N, S-H-J-O-N? You know, multiple varieties in that town.
So. Anyway, regardless, so I guess I'll start with the defense. Like I said, I have a list, and I'm not kidding. I have like 12 items on my list. I had like three or four or five of them rolling around in my head, and then I was like, I need to write down more. All right. So the defense. Actually, no, let me preface this with something else first. So typically games that I go to, live games, NHL games, don't end up going well. For one reason or another, typically the team that I am going to see, the player I want to see that plays on, doesn't end up like doing well in the game. So I did not have high hopes going into this game. Generally speaking, that's, I don't know if it's me. I don't know if it's my luck. I don't know if it's the games I choose. I don't know. But for whatever reason, 90% of the time, the game sucks. This was kind of really no exception. And so the other thing I need to preface this with is I used to like to sit behind the goalie of the team I was there to watch. And for the first and second periods, or first and third periods. And that always ended badly. Don't know why. It's like, particularly if I'm sitting right behind the goalie, it's just a disaster. If I'm sitting off in a corner, it's not quite so bad, but it's just better if I sit on the other end. That tends to work out better for teams for some reason. So that's why I was sitting at the other end where the offense was shooting twice. So again, this game was no exception. Second period when I had Pittsburgh's goalies right in front of me, they let in 3 goals. So the defense, So yeah, you watch games on TV and it's all mostly from the side. You're just watching things from the side. So I'm actually sitting behind off to one side, the goalie, and I got to see the disaster that was the defense from almost the goalie's perspective. And let me tell you, kind of terrifying. But also, I did witness Erik Karlsson playing actual defense.
Let it be said.
But he wasn't skating backwards, but yes, he can still play defense.
No, he was skating
with backwards. Your toes pointed forward.
No, he was
like not being pushed or pulled backwards.
Correct. It was only like once or twice in that second period because I down at the other end, you can't always see that sort of thing. But yes, did witness it.
You were able to see his numbers approaching you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was even on the left side of the goalie, which is where I was. So yeah, he was right in front of me and I saw it. I swear to God. I will write down a statement and get it notarized. Sorry, I blew your minds a little early, but there you go.
So maybe Ty Smith should be grateful he's getting out of that organization.
Pittsburgh's defense. Dear God, where do I start? So the first goal that went in, I saw coming from a mile away. I just started shaking my head with that. Oh, dear God, here it comes. Because for whatever reason, both defenders decided that it was a good idea to be behind their own net to get the puck.
I'm getting itchy.
I know. Oh, my God. I was just like, oh, dear God, why are you doing that? There are only 3 reasons defenders should be behind the goal line. All right. Or 4. There's 4 reasons. 5. No, I guess it won't do it. No one expects a Spanish Inquisition skit. Anyway, so there are only 4 reasons. 1, they are in the net with their goalie trying to stop the puck, therefore being behind the goal line. 2, they're in a corner hitting somebody and hoping that a teammate gets the puck from the guy that they're hitting. 3, they can get to the puck faster than anyone else behind the net, so long as they have time and room to do it. And 4, I can count really, I promise.
Just looking at NHL defensemen.
Yeah. And 4, if the goalie leaves the puck behind their net and there's nobody from the other team in their zone, you know, that's it. You don't go behind the net. You don't go behind the goal line. Your goalie is behind the goal line in the net. You need to be in front of your goalie. And they're not half the time. And it just, that's why they were making me twitchy. I was just like, oh my God, why are you doing that? Also, half the time they're not in the right position. And the other half the time they are watching the puck and not the players. And so therefore they all gang up on the player with the puck, leaving the guy without the puck open to take the pass and score. So basically the defenders are not defending is what I'm saying. Occasionally they have little bursts, but like the whole thing behind the net, oh God, it was so painful. It was so hard to watch. I was just, really, Pittsburgh, hire me as a consultant, and it'll be happier for so many people. So they're watching the puck too much, behind the goal line too much, and out of position too much. They wonder why they got scored 5-1.
All right, Cassie, can I ask a question? Did anyone turn into a brute, an actual bear or penguin during power plays?
No.
So the only thing that could have saved that game, from the sounds of it, you didn't get to see. Got it.
Right. Right. Well, actually, it was bad enough that like partway through the third period, I was starting to feel really bad for the Penguins. And that's saying something, because I started getting a migraine in the third period.
I'm sure so was Sidney Crosby.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, on to the other things that they weren't doing or were doing and shouldn't be doing. There were not many cross-ice lateral passes going on, which seemed to kind of defeat the whole purpose of trying to get the puck to people to shoot. They had lots of shots on goal. I think they had 40 shots on goal in this game, but they were poor quality shots. They were like in the crest of the goalie, crest of the jersey on the goalie. And they kept shooting glove side where the goalie could easily like get the puck. Like what? You've got another side. You've got the blocker. No, they kept shooting glove side. I don't know what the story was with that. And on top of that, they weren't getting guys in front of the net. Everybody was hanging out at the perimeter and shooting from the perimeter, you know, like in basketball. But you don't get 3 points from out there, guys. This is not basketball. And so they were shooting through a bunch of traffic and it wasn't getting anywhere either, you know. There were a couple of players, like fourth liners kind of guys, who did not want the puck. Did not want to touch it, did not want to have it, certainly did not want to shoot it. on top of that, the passes were horrible. They were bouncing off blades. You know, people were not expecting to get a pass from anybody. And if they were passing, they were like passing way in front of the guy who couldn't get it, you know. So it really comes down, and then a lot of the veterans just had this like resigned to their fate kind of like attitude that, all right, well, I guess we're done for the season, you know. You've got 5 weeks, you've got 19 games. Okay. You're not. And so what it came down to ultimately, is that, literally half of that team is emotionally fragile, which of course I've kind of been saying since December. When I'm saying people aren't resilient, the opposite of that means they're fragile, especially the younger guys. And, you know, they're trying not to lose. They're not trying to win. They're not taking risks. They're trying to be as like playing as safe as possible, not making mistakes, not taking risks, which is not getting them anywhere anyway, right? If you're going to lose 5-1, then dear God, at least have some quality shots on goal, right? take some risks, take some chances. You've got nothing to lose at this point.
But they outshot him. They outshot him almost 2-1, Cassie.
I know, but they were bad shots.
Volume. Bad. No, volume.
Quality over quantity, man.
Is that why Michael Bunting led the forwards a nice time in that game? No.
I think Crosby might be playing injured, too. But, you know. Whatever.
No, as soon as Pasternak scored the opening goal early in the second, you could tell it was over.
Yeah, they're just fragile.
In my goodness, Alex Nedeljkovic. Patrick, I watched him play 2 games in the past week. He actually stands up and covers the top corner of his net.
Mm-hmm.
He hugs the post until he doesn't, and then he lets up the reverse VH goal. It's
mind-numbing.
It really is.
I mean, the goalies aren't bad, but everybody else isn't not great good in front of them. So, and of course, you know, just like Crosby can't carry the team, neither can either of their goalies.
And this is why the general manager is having to trade for a bunch of prospects who can play in the next year or two. Good Lord.
Yeah. So, at this point, they're basically packing it in and they're done for the season. I mean, as if you couldn't tell. Being scored 15 goals, outscored being scored 15-1, you know, but it's also like self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If you think you're going to lose, then you're going to lose.
Well, at least they top 10 protected their first overall pick.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God. The hysteria in San Jose, if that were to happen.
Oh, why? What's happening in San Jose, Patrick?
Already enough.
Do we need to have an intervention?
We might.
Haven't we had an intervention?
No.
Yeah, maybe so not. So I was having a conversation after the hurdle trade to Vegas. And all the San Jose fans were
losing their minds,
beside themselves, incensed.
Yes.
And I had to remind one of them, Vegas hasn't thought of you guys in years. They are like this is a one-sided rivalry. You had a couple playoff series, but since you haven't been around, they don't care anymore. Vegas
is the popular kids. Is indifferent. They're the popular kids who are like, who are you again?
they're the popular kids that you may have beaten in that one-on-one basketball game once, and they've gone to run off, you know, like another 30 or 40 wins after you, and you still think you can rub it in their face because you beat them by one, you know, by one bucket once.
The Sharks are still talking about their high school glory days while the Vegas Golden Knights went on to win at least a pro title.
Yep.
Literally.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Al Bundy. Mm-hmm. You know, I played high school football and scored 4 touchdowns in 1 game once.
Okay, so Patrick, I have to ask. Did Hasso Plattner dictate this deal?
No, he is an absentee owner.
So he isn't asking his general manager to clear a bunch of money off the deck.
I have never once gotten anything from Hasso Plattner's brief statements, anything other than he puts people in charge of the franchise and tells them not to lose too much money and then just goes back to Germany.
So it was the losing too much money that came to mind, because just like with all teams lately, even your sixth place. They've dropped down a little bit, but they have games in hand, Winnipeg Jets. If you're not winning and the product is as mundane as Cassie described, which is like 7 or 8 out of 10 games.
Mundane would be generous at this point, but yes.
fair. I mean, I figured it's, oh, Mike Greer's still cleaning up Doug Wilson's mess.
Oh, he's got years of that left.
Uh-huh. But hey, Brent Burns comes off the books at the end of next season.
And remind me what they got for him.
Who?
Not a heck of a lot, huh? Yeah.
Did you catch all that?
Mm-hmm. No one can remember. That's
like, and there's only three more seasons of Eric Carlson on the books. Only three.
And got a lot from that too, didn't they? Checks notes. Oops.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to lose before you can actually win.
You know, sometimes you got to purge before you can rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, I have been screaming, not at the clouds, but at Doug Wilson for many, many years about his venture capital mindset. Invest in something and hope it turns a profit really quick, and do everything you can to try and turn a profit really quick. And be damned the future, be damned the long-term plan.
Oh, wait, Pittsburgh Penguins again?
A little bit.
Which is why it's also so surprising when venture capital comes into the game more and more and more. And just the acquisition cost of 7th and 6th and 5th round draft picks is skyrocketed.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird dichotomy.
I have been operating under the suspicion that Mr. Plotner, because he is such a hands, I mean, you never hear from the guy, is... There's some interesting tax laws in Germany. And provided he can maintain a certain loss value on some of his assets that are foreign owned, he gets a tax break. So, you know, so long as we don't fall outside the boundaries of where it becomes beneficial for him to lose money on the team, and it's stupid to say beneficial, but it kind of is. And if you want to read more about it, there's a really interesting article about some of the Uwe Boll films that were made. Like, he was the guy that did like all those really bad video game adaptations for like Blood Rain and what were some of the, I don't remember them all, but if you Uwe Boll, UWEBOLL, and they will explain to you why he was making such crappy movies. Big budget, never expected him to make any money. Got a huge tax break in Germany because of it. Because it was a loss. So, you know, he still breaks out, right?
Yeah, you have to spend just enough so you don't have to pay more.
Right. You have to lose just enough so that everything balances in the end. That's my suspicion with Hasso. I don't have anything to back it up. It's just gut. So, yeah. You know, this is completely hearsay.
Seattle Mariners? Wait.
Well, that's kind of what I was sort of getting to a little bit, Cassie, is that, you know, there are other teams that sort of do operate this way, and you can kind of tell by the product they put on the ice. It's just good enough, but not so good.
Yeah, Mike Greer is now in a much more palatable spot, because after the season ends, he only has two players on the rosters with any sort of no move protection.
Logan Couture and Mark Edward Vlasic.
Ding and ding. Now, obviously, only one player can actually be moved.
And it ain't Mark Edward Vlasic.
Nope. He stands still now. Unless the cap really rises up and someone wants to, you know, take a draft pick or something to eat some salary in two seasons time. Probably not going to happen.
Nah. Let them both play it out.
Exactly. At this point, Couture, he could get the Adam Henrique treatment at some point. Oh, you were a good center, so let me become, you know, the second or third line center on a playoff bound team for a run.
Yeah, you go play third line in Tampa. I'm doing this just to piss Cassie off.
Who?
The team that has a really, really, really nice pathway to the cup final.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think Vegas is repeating.
I don't think they can get everyone healthy that they would need to repeat.
Well, that's problem number one. And then just looking at how every other team is loaded up, you know.
Almost
yeah, some everyone. Really didn't. Some didn't need to. At least this week, they didn't need to. If Vancouver can just get through a first round series, I think they'll be in okay shape. Colorado, who knows what they're going to do?
They just announced O'Connor's out for
his own. Yep. Which is why they got Mittelstadt.
Kind of. I don't know. I Willis Reed comes to mind right now. And his name is Gabriel Landeskog.
Mm-hmm.
Who is not playing this season either.
Yeah.
Well, he's.
No, they just announced he wasn't going to.
Okay.
Oh, they did. Good.
Okay, so they did quash that. Okay, good.
Yeah. They said that his recovery was scheduled for like a 12 to 18 month like time frame, and that he wasn't going to make the 12 month part of that.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good that they announced that it was quashed. Bad
because
that submarines their chances.
Yeah. The whole story with his comeback was if anything goes wrong, it's you're starting from scratch. You don't have those nice little save points in your recovery.
It's like me forgetting to save just before I go into a battle in Baldur's Gate 3, then having to replay 5 hours. Just to get back to that point. Yeah, I get that. Totally get that. So Tampa. Mm-hmm. Anthony Duclair's 3-month-long, season-long audition to be on the show of I'm a 20-goal scorer, get me out of here, seems to have paid off. Paid off beautifully. He's got 17 already. How did he on a bad team? And yes, you could always say, well, somebody's got to score. Well, yeah. And he's doing it. So put him somewhere where he
can. And the Sharks, out of all bad teams, struggled to put up any offense. Like, right. You could look at Vlad Tarasenko. He still had more than 50 points.
I know you can't stand him, Cassie, but I know you can't stand the team, but I am so happy for Duke right now.
No, the team's fine. I can't
stand it's the coach.
Yeah. You know, just as much, I dislike Cooper as much as you dislike Hackstall for same reasons or similar reasons. Because of how they develop certain players.
Well, yeah.
Or not develop certain players, as the case may be. So
if Hackstall won, he'd be a little bit tolerable.
Would he?
No, really? But it is.
You can lie to yourself and say that.
Yeah.
But he can't even win. And if you're not, you know, I can understand if you're. No, this is how warped it is. I can kind of understand if you're winning consistently, you know, not developing young players is an issue, but it is not a massive issue. If you're not winning,
and you're refusing to develop young players, that's where I have an issue. That's where the issue to me is bigger. Because it's like, these guys are proven to you they can't play, they can't win. Why are you still hanging on?
It's Vegas versus San Jose discussion. One team is winning. One team hasn't been for years. And there's no one to kind of pin hope on because no one has come through that system.
God, anybody that has, they punted. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Again, are we talking about Pittsburgh?
Pretty much.
They wonder why they're in the situation that they're in.
Whereas I think we talked about it last week. Dallas is the opposite of that equation. They were winning, 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 and then they were kind of the first round out team. And then they allowed some young talent to take over.
But they didn't go mortgaging their future to try and find players to help Ben and Sagan.
Right. They lucked out getting Heiskanen. They've done well with Jason Roberts, Rupe Hintz. They didn't have to tank, scorch earth, clean house like every other team does. They admitted to themselves, okay, we need some younger talent. Let's hold on to some picks. Let's not mortgage the future again and again and again, a la Pittsburgh. After your windows have closed. And, God. I mean, as soon as Ben and Sagan are gone, okay, that just opens up more room to, okay, they could make an acquisition if they really wanted in the offseason. They could take one of those roster spots, take all that cap hit, and let's say add Stamkos. Just throwing a wild name out there as a UFA who could actually contribute on a team. They are not handcuffed by, you know, retaining three salaries on players who will never play. I don't even know how to describe the things that Mike Greer has to do just to clean house. And Kyle Dubas kind of needs to do the same thing.
Is it bad that I have more faith in San Jose than I do in Pittsburgh right now?
No, it isn't.
Right. You know why? Because Dubas hasn't had to do this job. He was great at plucking low-cost players and putting them in decent positions. Whether they played for the Sioux or not. Whether they played for the Sioux or not. But he hasn't done the full rebuild, draft, develop, so on and so forth.
Well, he was
Greer
always
hasn't either, really.
Yeah, that's true, but
no, but he has demonstrated a willingness to do the hard stuff.
Right.
Similar to when Bill Guerin bought out Parise and Suter, sometimes you just have to do something that's hard.
You gotta rip the Band-Aid.
You do. Sometimes you got to break things on the set with a puck, you know?
Oh, they just did it again.
And this is why some of these guys are on TV. Sorry, we are currently watching the intermission panel for TNT breaking some LED panels in the background.
It's one that's been broken before, too. I think it was almost the same one.
Well, at least they're consistent.
And someone's... she was wearing heels and a skirt when she did it. So, yeah.
Well, it's not like Mr. Bissonnette knew how to shoot a puck flat anyway.
Oh,
so what else happened this week?
It looks like one of those kids that goes bowling for the first time and does the double bucket throw under their legs,
mm-hmm.
and still can't even figure that out.
He looks like one of the kids that I used to ref who hit me in the face with a puck when they were just trying to clear a puck to the corner. Instead, they hit it in my face. And that was the last game I officiated. True story.
Understandable.
A kid hit me in the face with a puck once. Once.
Oh, no. I was not as lucky as Johnny Dangerously.
Yeah. Thank you for picking that up. So what else? What else? Boo, boo, boo to the Flyers PR people for not making Tortorella available after yesterday's game. I totally get it. I totally know why they did it. I'm sure Torts had his say in not doing it, but I had popcorn at the ready for that post-game presser.
Well, you heard about what the Flyers CEO had to say about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That he would pay for any fine that Torts got for refusing to leave the bench.
Fine by me. That in going back, and it was funny because when they showed I watched the Flyers post game show, so that's why I was kind of, you know, had the popcorn ready. When they replayed his, you know, outburst on the bench, they did blur over everything so you couldn't lip read. Because he was so clearly
I'm not effing leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I went back and you know, watched the unedited version, mm-hmm. you know, the director's cut. And what I can take away from this is he was absolutely infuriated that McCauley would not come over and talk to him. He kept screaming at him, get over here, get over here. And the linesman went over and he said, you know, basically the linesman told him to get out of here. You know, they were a lot more polite. He was a lot more polite to them too, by the way. He, you know, he leaned over and said, you know, get him to come over here and talk to me. I want to know what he's doing. I want to know, you know, which as a coach kind of got it right. But I loved it. And what I loved the most was that it was the 2004 Cup winning team celebration night. So all those guys up in the press box were dying laughing like, mm-hmm. yep, well, I know that changed. Guy.
Yep.
That's their first big blowout though this season. You know, they've had games where they've looked bad and played bad and scores got up there, but you know, this was, I think it was Couturier said after the game, it may not have been Couturier, it was one of the two players they talked to, is basically like, you know, you got to get one of these out of your system every season type thing. So hey, good on them for just sort of going, okay, well, we'll just burn the film and go have a day off and have some fun.
It's about all you can do. Although no one uses film anymore, old man. It's video.
Yeah, okay. God, me nitpicky. It's a phrase, okay?
No, it's not okay. Yeah, it's okay. I don't really care.
Yeah, I know you didn't. We're just having some you know, radio arguments here. Yeah,
sibling rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else get traded that was of interest?
Not many of Philly's defensemen. Now, granted, half of them are hurt at the moment, but one player in, one player out. They didn't, you know, shuffle all the deck chairs. Like, everyone was speculating for weeks and weeks. Funny how that goes. Why is that, Patrick?
I can't say it.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, they're in the playoffs.
I've had a weird week, and this is just, you know, sort of sitting right on top of it too. Yeah, they're in the playoffs. They're in the playoffs. Who would have said that? And given the way everyone's playing behind them, they aren't getting out of the playoffs anytime soon.
Oh, no.
But they've, you know, it's not been gifted to them. I mean, they've definitely earned it, but, you know, nobody's riding their heels too much, making them feel pressure. Wow. Good times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm curious. Was there any team that had a better week than the Florida Panthers, who although they lost to the aforementioned Flyers, they went out and did a couple simple things to cover up the holes that crushed them in the finals against Vegas last year? They just brought in some depth NHL players that they did not have last year. Survive a long playoff run. Did any team honestly do better?
Carolina?
Questionable. We can get to them in a moment because I think they finally did something worthwhile by bringing in actual difference-making players.
I don't know, man.
Can we talk about the most popular thing traded or not traded being retaining salary?
17%.
How many of these teams, like, just, okay, we'll take your guy, but we're only going to pay him half of what you're paying
them? San Jose had to pay a couple of draft picks to only retain 17%.
I think that's going to... I'm struggling not saying San Jose, honestly.
No.
Because...
Talk through it.
What's the one thing that is becoming apparent to your point, Cassie, about what the most popular thing was? They can be a money launderer for a couple of seasons and get those third, fourth, fifth round draft picks and hopefully do a hell of a lot better with them than the old regime ever did. You know, just to wash some money through their system. They don't... Yeah, I mean, as far as, like, if we're talking about competitive teams and playoff pushes and everything, obviously no. But overall franchise, they got a first, a fifth, another seventh, First, fifth, seventh. What else? It was Klim Kostin, who they can turn around very easily next season. Another, third round pick. So they're loading the coffers in the right places,
mm-hmm.
and not dumping, pieces or assets that are going to be beneficial to them in next season, and clearing unbelievable amounts of salary, which I think they only have one slot. No, because Burns is retained. They've used all three of their slots.
They've used all three,
but
fact that cap actually is going to come up, how often are teams going to need to retain for about a year or two before they go, all kid in a candy store and spend all their money? I think there's going to be a year or two balance. No, I don't think all teams will.
No, not all teams will.
So
I'm looking at Vegas, probably New York, and Toronto would be ones that would need to launder money.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, somehow they're going to need to pay for goalies and defense when we're talking about the Leafs. Where have we heard that story before?
Everywhere.
In the last 20 years.
Vegas.
Oh,
Vegas. I am curious about Mark Stone and if he goes the way of Shea Weber, where he is able to come back, he is able to play, and then we never see him again just because the injuries get that bad.
That's his is the one that I'm, two back surgeries, now a lacerated spleen.
Yeah.
And that's Peter Forsberg territory, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He may become a permanent LTIR by next season. Which is going to give them obviously the room, and it'll be interesting to see if they start playing Robidoux Island with some of these guys.
I mean, they technically already are with Robin Lehner, but
yeah, that's true.
Same thing with him. It was was it a back or was it a hip issue?
I think it was hips. I honestly think they'd rather have him than have him on LTIR. Mm-hmm. Whereas Robidoux, they didn't want him. Nobody wanted him. So mm-hmm. You're injured.
Okay.
Definitely.
Honestly, they're a team. They were just missing Alec Martinez. And I think that's why they ended up making the Hanifin deal, which might have been the single best transaction. Because Vegas has still been playing well, but Aiden Hill was just coming back from injury. Logan Thompson had come back down to earth. They couldn't, they struggled in close goal games, higher scoring than usual. And Noah Hanifin can fly. He can skate with anybody in the Western Conference. And they don't need him to put up the points like other big name defensemen, but he could.
Yeah, he really, that one did come out of nowhere, kind of. I mean, there had been rumblings that Hanifin was, available and all this other yada, yada, yada stuff. But that one was, that's the one that started all of this fun, honestly, of watching fans lose their complete and absolute minds.
They started the fun and they ended the fun.
I'm so sick of Vegas. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Hey, God love them. I mean, it's Vegas, man.
Every hand that gets dealt at that table, you know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're going all in. Mm-hmm. I'll worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm going all in. And like I said to someone, I said, I am here for it because in 3 or 4 years, you know, when all of this is gone and they're, you know, they're looking like the Sharks, it could be, now you're going to see what real NHL fans look like in Vegas. Because there's legitimately no way they can keep doing this. I know because I tried NHL 22 once. I just continued to trade first and second, you know, round draft picks for players to try and keep my team in the playoff every year, and didn't even worry about drafting. I auto drafted, right? Didn't do any scouting or anything. I just auto drafted,
which is
trading all of that. And you know, I ended up having to bottom out after a while because there was,
which is the funny thing.
Yeah,
they held on to their first round pick. They don't have any in rounds 2 through 5, but they held on to their first.
Who is it?
And I imagine.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, they. I think it's a pick that they will actually hold on to and let play in the system because the bill's coming due.
Well, and I think they're doing an interesting job of what years they decide to hold on to their draft picks, their mm-hmm. higher end ones. If their pattern sort of seems to follow the years where it looks like it's going to be a deep draft in certain areas, we're not going to move a lot of picks. And in any years that it isn't, we'll go ahead and move them. Because whether the other staffs don't, I don't know, whether the other staffs don't have the same read of the room or what, you know, the price is still the price for a first round pick by and large. And it's only, you know, sort of after the season, do, you know, the draft rankings for, you know, the year after this one start coming out and being a little like, oh, this year looks to be weaker or this year looks to be stronger. And I don't know if they've got some magic tea leaves or something, but Vegas seems to be reading those patterns a little better.
So speaking of teams and draft picks, somebody had tweeted this on Friday. Arizona has 10 second round draft picks in the next 3 years. And then they have 7 third round draft picks in the next 3 years.
Hot damn, the Georgia Okefenokees are going to be awesome.
I mean, it's just 10. So they have 3 this summer. They have 4 the summer after, and then 3 the summer after that, which they may have more by then.
And they're a team that only has 1 active player on their roster over the age of 30. Yeah. They have a bunch of young guys playing. They've got a bunch of dead cap hits that start coming off the books this offseason. As soon as they can, you know, pay their water bills and find a place to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
They got something cooking there. Bill Armstrong's doing a good job.
Yeah, given what he's got to work with, he is. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yes, I know this is the 4th or 5th time we've had to tear it down to the studs, but...
But he's actually putting something back in place that can stand up for a bit.
Yeah, he is. They're at least, you know, even with the wicked long losing streak, they've been competitive in those games. I've watched a lot of them. They've been competitive in those games. And it is a lot of young mistakes. Give them that, right?
Yeah.
And Vemelka and Ingram are regressing to the mean, you know, finding the equilibrium. They can't stand on their head every night like they were doing early on to save the team from their own mistakes. But they're still there. They're still good. The one trade that got away still makes me laugh. Still makes me laugh. Uh,
So, Carolina.
Carolina. What's the point of hoarding a bunch of stuff if you don't do anything with it? What's the point of having a bunch of prospects if you don't have a place for them to play? I'm glad that they finally did something for the type of player that they've needed the past three postseasons in Gensel. So long as he, you know, can play and just get the puck in deep and drive into the offensive end. I think Kuznetsov's the biggest difference maker, more so than Gensel.
Really?
I do, and here's why. Yesterday, he made his team debut. Carolina is almost formulaic. After, if it's not a 7 p.m. Eastern start game, you're never sure what you're going to get out of the team. They're a little unpredictable. Their coach just drives this. We do this kind of one way all the time, and it just kind of works out. Because the odds balance out. The good and the bad even out over time, and they kind of figure out ways to win. In one of his first or second shifts, for a player who has not played hockey, period, in more than a month, he held the puck close to his offensive zone blue line and made three or four early first period passes that he created offensive opportunities the Canes don't get. They, you know, they were joking, they're the Corsi Canes for a reason, because they, if you saw the Kakaniemi goal from yesterday afternoon, it's pretty much a goal from behind the goal line. Pure dumb luck because they throw it on goal. But he was finding ways to get players open. And if he gets his legs back under him and can start playing with either Svechnikov or Natchez or let's say Gensel even, and he can start feeding finishers the puck, that's the dimension that they're lacking. Their playmakers are on the wings outside of Aho, and he's kind of the, he is essentially Sasha Barkov, but I don't think as many players in the league like him. Maybe not as talented, but he's good offensively. He can lead the team in scoring, but no one's going to give him his cookies until everyone starts giving him his cookies. But Barkov's still in the league. But I think for a run, probably more likely next season, Kuznetsov's the bigger acquisition for me.
Okay.
Now they'll still overplay their what should be their fourth line center in Jordan Staal, but they have a 1C, they have a 2C once they're conditioned, and they can let the players on the wings actually score. Because everyone talks about their series against Florida last year. What was the one takeaway from that playoff series? The Canes got goalied. Yeah. Right?
Well, they...
Go with it.
They couldn't score.
Go that. They couldn't score. They made Bobrovsky look better than...
I mean,
he didn't play, he didn't play poorly by any means, right, but
it was 50-50.
But know? They did not wear him out. They tire themselves out, yeah, by all the puck retrievals. And then when one person makes a subtle mistake, it's a 2-on-1 the other way.
They didn't do themselves any favors.
Correct. Having a little more dynamic player, maybe they can start building 2-goal leads and maybe they can finally start holding on to them instead of taking a lead. Blowing a goalie interference call because they didn't need a challenge. They were about to have a 5-on-3 and they challenged and they did not have Patrick's flowchart. Although the goal was one of the most, it almost challenged your chart a little bit.
Well, there are nuances in the chart.
Yeah. And the key is, did the skater intend to skate into the goalie who was just out of his blue paint?
There is that, and the second one, the one that has caused it to fail, was the puck didn't immediately enter the net after the contact. Mm-hmm. It was a continued play. Yeah. So it's not like, you know, they consider it bang, bang, right? Oh, I made contact with him and the puck went in the net at roughly the same time. The one that thumped it was the one that really thumped it. The other one was a bad call. They screwed it up. But the one that thumped it, was there was incidental contact. It was outside of the crease, but the puck didn't immediately go in. It went in afterwards because there was a tie-up caused by that incidental contact. So that's that little nuance there.
And there was enough time for a goalie to reset.
Reasonable time between, you know, the contact, and there was not, he was not given an opportunity, blah, blah, blah. Had the puck gone in the net immediately, that's a goal.
So, but
because it got stopped and stayed there, and somebody came up and, you know, threw in a rebound, and the contact had happened, even though it was outside of the net, yada, yada, yada. So there are, you know, there are complex situations, but that chart is like 90% coverage of pretty much everything. So, yeah.
So
there's a couple teams that need that.
Not giving yourself favors has hurt them in the past. Adding playmaker and a finisher sure makes it easier on yourself where you don't have to put yourself in those situations. This is why Vegas got Eichel 2 years ago. I don't think Kuznetsov will do the same thing for Carolina, but he'll insulate him a lot more.
Yeah, the thing is, they kind of don't need him to, right?
Exactly.
Because I think it opens up Aho and Svech. A little bit.
It should
have to carry everything.
And the key is, can they get past Florida? I think Florida is the only team in the Eastern Conference Carolina has to worry about. And if they can make it to the Stanley Cup final and give up their first round pick to Pittsburgh, then it's a, okay, how battered and bruised is the other team? I don't think they'll win the cup this year, but I think they gave themselves a better chance than they did a week ago. And I could see them being a front runners next year. Because I imagine they're going to get creative with their defense.
As in moving off some guys, maybe?
As letting one guy walk and maybe trading a player who's, let's just say, a Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones type deal. Maybe an RFA defenseman for an RFA forward.
Okay.
I see that potentially in the works this summer.
Okay, that kind of defensive creativity is fine, but if we're talking about the other kind, then no.
No, that's the only kind I'm talking about.
Okay.
You're thinking not whatever they're teaching in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the Erik Karlsson defensive creativity.
I literally am not exaggerating or joking when I said that they were making my eye twitch. Just, oh God, it was traumatizing.
Speaking of curiosity, when I heard about Ryan Johansson going back to Philadelphia, I said this statement to a friend. Well, he's either in the perfect situation to rehab his career or he's done. And 30 seconds later, I heard, oh, he's going on waivers. Oh, he's done. He might have played his last NHL game.
That was literally, we have to take something back in this trade.
You're not offering anything else? Okay, fine. We'll take him.
We don't want any of your draft picks. You don't have enough. We can't just give this play. Oh, okay, fine. Sure. We'll take him.
We'll figure out something.
You don't want him. We don't want him. We'll take him. unlike our blessed son, who Vancouver, you are now at the top of my bleep list. You do not do that to our beautiful Philip J. Kessel.
This has been the 3v3 Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at 3v3 Podcast. We're available for NHL consulting at reasonable fees.